Yes, it's Bagel Tech Big, the weekend show from the Bagel Tech Network, dealing with the entire week of technology. Do you want to hear it again? Because it's not been very big as a week. But we've got some fantastic stuff to talk about, and we've got an insanely great panel. I've learned that phrase this week from reading the Steve Jobs biography. This panel is insanely great. Bagel Tech, insanely great. How's my distortion field going? Yeah, okay, right. They're very impressed. Top left, the insanely great Steve Naber.
I think I'm going to cry now, because there's lots of crying in that book. So I'm listening to it as well at the moment.
How far in are you?
I am 5 hours in. Gates has just met Jobs.
Just met him?
Just met him, yes.
Right,
Don't spoil it.
No. He dies at the end, though.
No.
Eric?
Gates is dead.
Where are you, mate?
In the book?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm nearly finished. I have a couple of straggler chapters left. I think the Pixar stuff, I've got some left to read, but I've mostly finished it.
Okay, right, okay. Anyone else reading it? Ian?
No.
Sarah?
Not for me.
Sarah.
You won't be surprised that I'm not reading it.
Sarah would be going down to the local Go Outdoors and buying a knife to stab through the heart of it.
No, that's a bit of an exaggeration.
So I'm reading it up to the point that he's dating. He's just married Lauren Powell. So there you go. But so, he cries a lot. That's true. Go on.
The early Apple crew was a weepy lot. As you read the history, there's a lot of crying going on. I don't know why. Did anyone who's read the book, and I apologize for interrupting the introductions here, come away with a better appreciation of Steve as opposed to disliking him more from reading the book?
Personally, I think that he's come across as a lot more human than I thought he was. But he comes across as a real asshole in the book.
Human meaning flawed, I take it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he, if you look at the, I said weeks and weeks ago that any CEO that kind of takes the level of intricacy and detail that he looks at with stuff is stealing your money. And that's not the job of a CEO. It's not what they should be doing. That's the job of a PM or a marketing department or a product development department. And if you look at the flops that have gone on in Steve Jobs' life, those flops have been because of the fact he couldn't leave well enough alone. And I stand by that. Then he was stealing Apple's money. And that makes me think more and more that Apple is not controlled by Steve Jobs, is not in the shadow of his presence, and will most definitely continue to surge, because I think that what's currently there is not under that direct influence of Steve Jobs. I think he was probably, more than anything, a hindrance to development and progress.
That's kind of what I got too, at least at times. When his vision was totally left unchecked, it only ever wreaked havoc. But who else is on the panel?
Steve, what's your view?
The bit I'm concerned about is all of these young little graduates and little graduates, all free for
Wait, wait, did we introduce? I don't think we introduced Ian or Sarah, did we?
We've not done introductions at all yet. We'll do those in a second. Carry on, Steve. The gadgets, yeah.
Quick 30 seconds. All of these graduates and all of these management students and all these people who now are growing up and age 16 looking up to jobs, they're going to read the book thinking, this is how you become a multimillionaire. This is how I become the next CEO of the future Google, etc. I hope they don't think that, because if they try and live like he does, and I've had now people come into me and work since Jobs has now become famous, in the last 6 weeks, and they've started saying to me, oh no, we have to make the type font perfect, and we have to make the color of this perfect, and because that's what Jobs did. And I know Jobs, and people are now talking in the way of changing the way that and perfection is
really?
Everything. And if that effect and the way to treat people from what they're reading is now that's how they're going to treat people, talking to people, if they're an angel or if they're a piece of rubbish, then that will be horrible to the future generations, because everyone can't be Jobs. He was a
one-off. Yeah, they need to put they got to put a sticker on the front of the book that says, do not try this at home.
Explicit, do not follow.
There we go.
But that's funny, Steve. So you've actually seen firsthand people change their thought process, at least publicly, like in meetings, to try to emulate Steve. That's dangerous.
Yeah, no, I have people in work who are coming up to me saying, we're producing stuff and it's not perfect, that we've got to make it perfect. And
tell them they're not allowed to say that until they read the entire biography.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the thing that shocked me was I got through the next launch and he got to the very end and said, this computer is $6,000 plus a $2,000 printer, plus the fact it's so slow you'll have to get an external drive and run that at $2,000. So effectively, you got nothing left from $10,000 to get a working computer.
And did you know that the Macintosh, which I've been saying now since I read this biography, seems to be completely stolen, had nothing. I don't see what Steve contributed to the original Mac at all, except he worked everyone into the ground. I found some really great quotes from your favorite guy, Ewan Cringely, who said in his earlier book backing up exactly that claim. And this was written even in the early 90s. And it said that, you know, he ran the Mac group into the ground. What was I going to say? Shoot, I forgot my main point.
Well, he didn't do a great deal that was of any real value. So,
it'll come back to me.
He drove that team to deliver that product. They would not have delivered that product without him driving them.
I think the problem that you've got with Jobs is that you look at the things that he got into, and there's a certain element of luck and opportunism that went along with it. He happened to buy into Pixar. He pumped $50 million into Pixar.
Oh, Pixar was pure luck. And I mean, when I saw it, was pure luck. Toy Story came out of nowhere. Yeah. And when he bought Pixar, he only ever thought it was going to be a computer company just like Next and just like Apple, but for higher end graphics rendering for like medical professionals. Yeah. The movie thing came out of nowhere. So as soon as I started seeing those people on October 5th saying Steve contributed great things to children's animation, it's like, no, he didn't. Yeah, that was, you know, he was the financier, period.
Anyway, before I get loads more.
If it was only luck, how did he manage to get that team of 15 to sleep only every fifth day? To constantly work and work. That's a skill. It's a bad skill, but that's driving people beyond what is humanly.
Next week, you can join us for This Week in Steve Jobs' Biography, and we'll have read a bit more by that point. And Eric will have finished his, so, and done the straggling chapters.
Can I just come back on one point there?
Sure, Sarah, yeah.
One of you guys just said about the fact that it was Steve was lucky at the time that he met Woz and so on and so forth. I think you could equally
opportunistic
say the same of Bill Gates. Yeah. I mean, I was dealing with Microsoft long before IBM came along, but Microsoft would never have been the company that they are today if it wasn't for the deal that they did with IBM that allowed them to basically take over the PC industry.
Mm. No, absolutely.
It is right time, right place.
I've watched the Pirates of Silicon Valley as well this week, and that's one thing that eminently became.
Why does everyone watch that? That is the worst movie.
It's a crap movie, but having
it's
said
the worst movie.
But having said my that, wife, it does replicate a lot of the events quite accurately.
My wife walked in partway through that and thought, "Why are you watching a film from the 1970s?"
Right, before we get any further and we turn this into a real sad fest, we're going to start the show. Hello, welcome to Bagel Tech Big, the week's technology, nothing to do with Steve Jobs' biography. I've got a fantastic and an insanely great panel.
That's the one.
Top
That's
left.
Started it.
Mr. Steve Neighbor.
That's a gateway phrase.
Steve Neighbor, how you doing, mate?
Excellent, thank you very much.
I'm really impressed with myself that I didn't say Steve Jobs there either, so that would have been really cool.
Yeah, no, thank you very much for that. Yeah, no, good. Not too bad at all.
You provided one of our great stories this week as well, mate. How's the week been for you?
Good.
Are you looking forward to being Frankie Boyle's antagonist?
I'm not going to go down that
road.
Professionally, I don't think I could, as you said, the Frankie Boyle saber... would probably put my professional life in tatters, so I'll probably step away from that. I'm happy to talk about that if required.
No, we can leave that alone. Next to him, it's my partner in eating crime. And I'll tell you what, mate, I think I'm still suffering from that frigging steak at the Ryther Arms. Ian Grant. Mate, I'm slow as you like. Moving on. It was a monster. It was a double monster. Yours was a monster. And how good did that taste?
That was the best.
I mean, I'm due in York again in a few weeks.
It's truly very, very good. Well, best steakhouses in the area.
That's just incredible. We're due up there again in a few weeks for some stuff, so I will be going out with you again. We're not going anywhere else. I mean, you suggested going to the Chinese over the way from the hotel that I'm in. Not a chance.
It's very good, actually. It's a bit expensive, but it's very good.
No, stick it, mate. I'm sorry. I want the either arms or nothing.
You want the steak.
I'm planning to not eat anything of any meat for previously 3 weeks prior to that, but...
You're going to have to.
I want
to
go there, mate. Brilliant, mate. Yeah. Good choice. Excellent. Next to him, we've got Mrs. Sarah Gray. How you doing, girl?
I'm right, thank you.
I'm sorry I've married you there before. Before time.
Yeah, I'm used to you calling me Mrs.
How's your week been? Voices back?
Yeah, it wasn't the beginning of the week. And I did a presentation on Tuesday to 70 people with... which
a megaphone.
My voice just about held out for, but I had people saying that they couldn't hear me because my voice was so squeaky.
Did they love you to bits?
Yeah, okay.
Oh, okay. Didn't go down well then.
It did. It was good, actually. It was very good. I was very disappointed because I was up, was really up for doing it, and it was an important presentation, but I, you know, not being able to deliver it the way I would have liked was very disappointing, but couldn't be helped.
And on the video, Skype has got some weird effect with your...
Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
I have no idea.
It is at my end.
No, it's not. Never mind.
I've got a phantom scalp.
Phantom scalp. There's the title.
It's showing up on my video as well, so it must be my end. Part of the reason why I didn't want to...
It must be you then.
But yeah, I think it's my end. Sorry about that.
Phantom scalp is yours.
I go like that.
And last but by no means least, from California, Mr. Eric Lanigan.
And I remember what I was going to say. Steve Jobs announced 2 weeks before the introduction of the original Mac that it was now a business computer, not a home computer, because the price had gone up to $2,500 in 1984. That's what I was going to say.
Right. Thank you for that. Hello. How are you doing?
I'm good. Did we just lop off the beginning, or is that going in? Does anyone know what I just am talking about? I have no idea.
No, I'd love to edit, but I can't. Video editing is just not my bag, baby. The week in technology, what's been happening, what's not been happening. Philips have created the personal beehive. You can have your own beehive at home, mounted on the wall, with what looks like a rod for kebabs that goes up the centre, and I'm presuming that the honey runs out on that. Whether you get your arse stung to bits on that, I'm not sure, and what the safety measures are, I don't know. But there's even a little place to put some flowers for the bees. How good's that? No word on price yet, unfortunately.
It's funny, when you said personal beehive, my first thought was the hairdo coming back from the 60s.
God, yeah, the Maisonettes. Who remembers them? John Briggs, the man that I said absolutely, for definitely, did Siri. I've been proved right, it is, and no one bloody believed me. You unbelievers, get lost. Definitely did Siri, and he's been told by Apple to keep shtum, and he's replied, rather good, I think, hang on, my contract's not with you, it's with the people that hired me, so get stuffed. A big story that I think Sarah definitely wants to talk about is the fact that Flash or Adobe have said that they're not going to do mobile Flash anymore. They've manufactured a car that's the size of a single molecule. I'm not sure when it's going to go into production, and there's no word on prices yet. There's also no word on whether it's a diesel or a petrol engine, but we shall see in time. There you go.
The only car where the fuel molecules are larger than the car.
Exactly. That's
it
exactly
could be electric.
It. No, the electrons would still be bigger. No. Eric, you're going to love this one, mate, because you are desperate for competition in America for telecoms. And China Telecom has applied for a license to transmit and use cell data in the USA, mate. You will have competition coming your way from the far red country on the left of the globe.
Exactly the kind of competition we were hoping for. I mean, wait.
And Nokia has created the human form cell phone as a concept. It looks more like a pregnancy test, but I promise you that is a cell phone that you're looking at there, and it's Nokia's. Could we be seeing the death of Nokia here? I think so. And also, there's been the suggestion that the Xbox 720 will be out soon. And I don't really care whether the rumours are true or not. I just love the fact that Joystick put a picture up, which was a mock-up of what the 720 may look like, and it's just bloated in the middle. All they need to do is add a red ring of death to that, and that would be it. Where should we start, then? The week in technology. I mean, the other thing that's happened here in the UK, so we should start with the UK story because we're a UK network, is the fact that Best Buy in April decided that they were going to migrate a lot of their services over here to the UK. And they built 11 stores across the country. And some of them have... the paint's still drying, it has to be said, on them. The one at Hayes in Middlesex, I've stayed opposite that and been over to it and bought a thumb drive from it. And they're talking about now they're going to close them. Steve, you brought this subject in. So, I mean, what's the word on the closure dates, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, they started opening, Best Buy opened 11 stores. They started opening in April 2010. It's now November, so some 6 months ago. And they're now closing all of them immediately, just closing them. I think Best Buy in the UK are under quite a lot of competition, obviously from online, Amazon. But I think they're also under quite a lot of competitive competition from local stores or UK stores like Dixon's. I think Comet as well. So I think they've just decided that the market is not right for them in the UK and they've closed them.
I mean, normally, you know, we'd look at that and think that it was a UK story only. But Teresa in the chat room, who's from Boston, is saying that that's made news in the US as well, quite significantly. So. Eric, what have you got over that side?
Well, I started to shake my head because I thought you were saying they had competition here. They don't, actually. The Best Buy is the last surviving big box retailer.
Yeah, CompUSA disappeared. And
Circuit City. Yeah. They're always, wherever I lived, any town, they're always those big three that you could count on. Not anymore. But there's been a big outcry now because of sales tax in California, at least. California passed a law that and within a year, by 2013, they want to start charging sales tax on all Amazon.com transactions to counteract the anti-brick-and-mortar effect that they've had. My problem with that is, why are we helping Best Buy instead of Amazon? I think they forgot that you're helping now, instead of Amazon, you're helping Best Buy and Walmart. They already ate up the little guys. They already ate up the little dealerships and the little electronic stores that were there is just one giant warehouse over another. Mm. They missed it. They wanted to help the little guys. They missed their chance years ago.
I mean, there's a point here in the chat room as well. Max S is saying that apparently Best Buy is part owned by Carphone Warehouse, and there's a huge element of Carphone Warehouse in this. So their stores are going to be sold off to them to use. And also, Darren is saying in the chat room that Comet was sold this week for £2.
Indeed.
Yeah, which... they pumped Comet off for £2. It was to a hedge fund, apparently. I just got the story.
Yeah, I mean, Comet was a good store, I have to say, because Dixon Store Group haven't got the best of reputations when it comes down to customer service. No. And Comet's was always significantly better.
Unfortunately, the thing is with Comet, they've actually suffered far greater than a lot of the other retailers. They've actually suffered, was it 19.6 percentage drop in sales in the last year, which is 22%. Way bigger than a lot of the others. And I have no idea why, because as you say, Ewan, their customer service is far better than Dixon's. I wouldn't buy anything from Dixon's.
Yeah, it's stuck though, isn't it? The only large sort of retailer, looks like in the US, Eric, you've got Best Buy here in the UK, and we have with DSG Group, carries Dixon's and the dreaded PC. Well, I mean, one thing I do think is ironic, and I don't think they see it, is the current range of adverts, and everyone's caught them on the TV in the UK, is they've got Darth Vader landing in his ship coming to indoctrinate the hordes and the evil empire.
I mean, are we saying...
It's the evil empire.
Are we saying, I mean, this is a equally a transatlantic story. I mean, are we saying that the bricks and mortar of electronics sales is dead and gone? Are we saying it's all online now? We're talking about Expansys, eBuyer, Newegg, those kind of people are the ones that are taking it all over.
Yeah. Yes, but I'm saying
go ahead, Eric.
I'm saying they killed themselves. I think when people talk about Amazon in relationship to local bookstores and the specifically mom and pop bookstores, it's the same criticism that people used to say about Barnes and Noble, Borders, and the same type of thing. Instead of having value-added customer service, knowledgeable people helping you to find the right thing. They change the model into a giant warehouse of cheaply priced goods where you are on your own. And if that's your model, then yeah, an online warehouse with cheap shipping can overtake you overnight. And that's what we have.
Thank you for saying shipping.
To be honest, Eric, I think there's a very good reason for that. And it's the same issue that the computer companies have been facing, which is that the margins have been slashed to the bone on this. So they can't afford to do anything other than that. They can't afford to provide the same level of service that you get when you go to somewhere like John Lewis, you know, that maybe charge a bit more, but they offer a better level of service. The only exception, I think, to this is really in the UK is Argos. You know, in terms of the high street, they do seem to be doing okay, and they always seem to be. You know, the last computer I bought from Argos. You know, if you know what you want, it's as good as buying from online, and you've got the benefit if you can just go in and pick it up.
Are we past suck it and see purchasing now? You're not going to buy vegetables and those kind of things without having seen them first. But I mean, with computing devices, you're buying an item out of the box, and even the one that you look at in the store, actually they give you a sealed box that comes out of the back of a storeroom. So where's the real benefit to having a display item where you play and suck it and see?
A TV. I wouldn't dream of buying a TV without having seen it in the shop. A chance to look at the picture and play around with the controls.
Well, the last TV I bought off the internet. And it was because I saw a friend who got one of them and it looked great.
Right.
But yeah, that's the only thing. You've got to wait for a mate to buy one before you get one yourself.
I think that is a big problem here. A lot of people use the brick and mortar stores as the local showrooms for Amazon.com. As a business model, that doesn't work. And that is a problem. I understand why people do it, though. Amazon sucks to browse. You cannot browse Amazon anywhere nearly as easily as you can walk through the aisles of a Best Buy and say, oh, look at the pretty things on display that I can buy. I didn't know those existed. You're not going to get that experience from Amazon. But the way that they've made it so that you bump into a Best Buy employee about as frequently as you run into electrons on an atomic scale, colliding with them, that makes it no more easy for the consumer than going to Amazon.com. Or going to a website. So that's the problem. If you want to get back to, you know, you got to have the knowledgeable people in the smaller areas where it's more of a service center that you provide support, like the geniuses at the Apple Store, that kind of idea. That's what needs to come back in order to resurrect the brick and mortar non-Amazon stores.
I mean, are we saying that there's a technical aspect that's lacking then in the people that are the Best Buy support staff? I mean, are we saying...
Oh, God, yes. Well, here at least they don't know anything. I mean, it's like they just pull them off the street. They don't even know what they're selling.
Yeah, they're just box shifters. Been lucky in the UK.
Dixons, yeah.
I've heard these guys. They just lie. They just totally BS. They don't know what the products are. They're like, oh, yeah, well, see, that iPad has a Retina display and that one's got a Pentium 3 inside. They don't know what they're talking about.
It's very much a case of most of our UK.
So inevitability then of collapse of Best Buy. But it's quite surprising. Like I say, there is several stores here in the UK where literally the paint is not dry yet and they're still not fulfilling. So the Carphone Warehouse spokeswoman has said they'll go into a three-month consultation period now, at the end of which... Carphone Warehouse could be left holding all of the bricks and mortar that's available to them. So we shall see.
So they might our company
for nearly anyway now.
So they'll probably just turn them into Carphone Warehouse stores.
I admire a company for having the courage to stick with the Carphone name about 20 years after no one uses a Carphone anymore.
I mean,
yeah, but that's the thing about a name, though, isn't it? I mean, you know, when Charles Dunstan first formed the company, that's very much where they were, but. It shows that the power of a brand, once a brand's established, it doesn't matter what it's called.
It's the biggest phone. Is it still the biggest phone provider in the UK?
Carphone Warehouse is huge in the UK, so yeah, I think he's doing all right myself.
Yeah, I mean, I love them because they're independent.
HP has given WebOS developers a chance to get hold of a touchpad for $150. I just wanted to talk about this one briefly because... Is this because there's kind of like someone's giving CPR to WebOS, or is this the fact that they've still got stock they want to get rid of? But, I mean, why give it to developers if it's not because you want them to develop?
I secretly think so. They're going to flog it off to somebody. They want to get a few people seeded that want that start to want to write apps for it.
So they're still seeing this as a viable business model.
I think so.
I think they just had a last. They had their stock of touchpads that they could sell for that price. And this is probably a better decision than just giving it to anyone who just wants to buy it for that price. But I don't really think it was calculated. I don't really think they knew. I don't think they have a plan in mind. I think they just thought, well, we're going to sell them to somebody, so we may as well, you know, cut our losses and try to make a couple of apps get developed as a result.
So we're still saying WebOS is flatlining.
Yeah.
Yeah, I said all the way along that that I never thought it could take off because of the lack of apps.
Never say never. I'm reading Steve Jobs' book. Have I mentioned that? and he said he died a few times. Not literally, but I think from that you have to realise that you can always come back from a situation. If WebOS gets an amazing developer following like Linux has, and there's lots of people who suddenly start developing for it, then there could be a real surge behind it, and that might overtake the evil empire of Apple. Or
Steve, when you went off air, did you take an illegal substance?
No, I ran downstairs and turned the booter back on.
Steve, are you implying that that they might overtake the evil Mac empire when Apple start ring fencing their sandboxing their Mac, the applications in their Mac OS store? Oh yeah, they've actually announced that they're going to do that, haven't they?
Yeah, no, I think there is a real recognition that they are doing what IBM did, or were very close to achieving back in the early 80s or mid 80s, and why not stick it out to that community, the pirate community, and let them kind of really take off with it. What have they got to lose?
I love the fact that Steve Jobs' autobiography means that everyone's become a frigging IT historian. And they remember back to the 90s and the 80s.
Yeah.
With such conviction.
Yeah, I remember back in the 70s, and I was born in the 80s, so there.
You were born in the 80s? Oh, shit, I'm old.
And I have vivid memories of Xerox PARC in the 1970s because of those books. So, what does that tell you?
When Star Wars was out.
Star Wars, I actually watched Star Wars at the Gourmont in Birmingham and queued around the block because it was
Speaking of 1977 Star Wars, you know what I just watched again last night just for the heck of it? I wanted something funny to watch. I put it on. The riff tracks of the Star Wars Holiday Special. Are you guys aware of the Star Wars Holiday Special?
No.
I'm Googling it now.
Oh.
Is that your pick of the week?
Yes. Would you like it now or should I save it?
No, give it the pick of the week. That's fine.
Okay.
Teresa in the chat room says, in that case, Eric, I'm guessing you're younger than my kids. Damn, I'm old. Sorry. He's older. I think I am old enough to be your father, probably just about, Eric. So.
That's a good link.
Damn. Flash. Flash has been stopped for the mobile platform. Steve Jobs from beyond the grave has reached out and choked the living crap out of Adobe Flash. What have we got to say about this one?
Surprised?
You're not surprised, or you are surprised?
Not surprised in the end.
I mean, was it really a? I mean, he said it was a CPU sapping monstrosity that was always going to die anyway. I mean, it was that prophetic, or is it actually he's caused that demise?
I think to some extent he was right.
People have just woken up to the fact that Flash is a hog.
No, I mean, those of us that work with it, some of us are well aware of that fact. It does, you know, if you do web development and you use it on a site, it does actually have a create a big overhead. It's a pain in the neck. No, I mean, I agree with Steve on this, and it was I didn't agree with him very often, but this is one of the stances that Apple took that I completely agreed, both from the point of view that he was right, and also because I actually thought in the long term it would actually do a great service for moving HTML5 on, which is really what this is about.
I agree. When I saw this, I was very surprised, and I'm trying to remember why, or figure why was I surprised, because it makes perfect sense. I mean, Flash for a long time has been bloated. It's had problems such as the text inside has not been indexable by search engines. I mean, just lots of stuff that has been video plays terribly on mobile devices, as do games and anything that it's not that's not optimized for a standard Pentium machine. Even on the Mac, the performance has been bad, and people use it to just play MPEG-4 video. So I think the surprise came from the fact that it was one of those moves where, up until the day they killed it, they were saying, we pledge our full support behind making Flash into the future. We're going to build it for each device. We're going to build it for each mobile phone. You know what? We've just canceled it entirely. Never mind.
Well, they haven't canceled it yet for anything other than mobile. But I think because of the way that the mobile is taking over, I think effectively it will kill the whole product eventually.
Because
the HTML5 will take over become so important for all mobile platforms that will then mean that HTML5 will take over support for all websites.
Now, before you go any further with that, though, I've got to say, as a lay person who doesn't understand the web era, if in the coding sense that you do, Sarah and Ian and the other guys, I looked at HTML5. I understood that HTML5 was supposed to be slicker and faster and lighter, but I've never perceived that HTML5 has got the foothold enough to usurp the importance of Flash. Flash is still out there as being one of the...
Oh, I agree. I agree, Ewan. It is at the moment. But when you consider that there was no Flash support on any Apple platform, i.e. iPad, iPhone... there was still a market out there on Android and such for Flash, so they had a market. But when you consider that all mobile, when you take out the fact that in however length of time, Flash will be gone from all mobiles, and when you consider the amount of internet access is now by mobiles and how that's going to increase in the next few years, it becomes a fait accompli about HTML5.
So this is a smart move.
Yeah, absolutely. That was my first thought about this, was about the fact that, great, this is a huge development for HTML5.
Excellent point, Sarah, because I was just about to say that the future is mobile. Everything's going mobile. That's why Flash has been in such trouble, because everyone who doesn't have their site work on a mobile phone is screaming about it. That's why the Flash will eventually die out. But I think is because they're starting with mobile, and that's where the future is. But I think this is a good thing, because if Adobe continues to make these tools to allow Flash developers, people who are in the Flash development environment and like those tools, to use the same tools and the same environment to then create native applications and native video and CSS experiences on each platform and in HTML5, I think that benefits everybody.
What you mean? You're saying as an aid towards migration?
Well, that's how I saw the press release, was that they're gonna continue to make the Flash tools and the Adobe Air tools, but they're gonna instead of focusing on having them run in their own software environment like a Java, write once, run anywhere, they're going to recompile what you create as a Flash or Air developer into native code for each device type.
All right. Okay.
Or to HTML5, when applicable.
Yes, it comes to something now that even Microsoft decided to abandon any kind of video things like Flash on their platforms too. Windows 8's not going to have it. Windows 7 phone doesn't have it.
Don't you start slagging off Silverlight.
Well, that's never an update in the water, I think. Now, anyway, there's debate.
I thought I heard something about Silverlight as well, possibly. I don't know whether there was an official announcement from Microsoft, but I'm sure I heard a rumor or something this week about that.
Yeah, there was something saying there wasn't going to be another version, wasn't there?
Silverlight's dead in the water.
Oh, I'll find out. I'll ask when. I'm going to Microsoft tomorrow, so I'll ask them.
Amazon has got its own Siri-like rival, and they've increased production of the Kindle Fire. Was this always coming?
I'll tell you, you caught me by surprise.
They probably were always going to announce that they increased production in a few days before they actually put it on sale, just to get it into the media and therefore just to increase the marketing on it.
Yeah, I mean, there's still no release date for the UK here at all for the Kindle Fire, but they're saying that they're increasing production already based on expected pre-orders. The question was whether this was hype or whether this is actuality, and whether they've just underproduced for an overpriced demand, and then they're going to come in with the support for that demand.
Well, Android does have voice recognition software on it.
Yeah, they've got their own version, it says here, on the story that I picked up on Tech Radar. There is no name for this voice support, but I mean, I guess it's just within the Android platform from what they're talking about. Mm. But they're really throwing an awful lot of money behind the Kindle Fire as being the solution to the tab problem. Is this a real threat to Apple or not?
Nah, don't think so.
Probably not.
I mean, I'm actually looking at buying a Kindle, and I thought about whether I should wait until the Fire comes out, and I'm not going to touch it with a barge pole.
I disagree. I think it is a big threat to Apple. It's a completely different market price-wise. Mm. It's attractive to all those customers who already trust Amazon with their credit cards. Why not? You on Amazon, click onto the extra thing, buy that extra tablet. I think it is a big
It's a huge threat.
Go on, Eric.
Well, who said it's not? Sarah and Ian?
Yeah,
I don't think it is.
Oh, how could it not be? It's like half. It's half the price. It's less than half the price.
But would it be as good? Would it be as simple? Would it have the instant appeal of an Apple product? As I'm not sure. Although saying that, the amount of people I see on the train these days all got Kindles does make you wonder.
See, I think this is the question that I've got to ask you, and I'll take any open answers on this. In me trying to understand whether the Kindle Fire is a winner or a loser, I'm sitting looking at the Kindle and thinking whether the Kindle's taking away from sales from the Fire for a start. Because actually the people that have got Kindle want to be able to read a book as though it was real book and just flick through the pages with the page, next buttons. And looking at the Kindle Fire, I'm sitting wondering, if you look at the model of Apple, you know, going again, thinking about the Steve Jobs biography here, there's an awful lot of stuff where he's been convinced that this is the way the market would go, this is what the consumer wanted, and actually there is absolutely nothing in terms of print media on the iPad which has succeeded. I don't think there's any successful magazine subscriptions, and I don't think there's any successful sales of books unless they've gone through the Kindle application. I don't think that's particularly good as well. As I think the thing is that actually, do people want iPad for books? No, they don't. Do they want Kindle Fire for books? No, they don't. Do they want Kindle for books? Yes, they do.
Yeah, I think, I would completely agree with that. But the biggest reason that's making me think that for an e-book reader, and just an e-book reader, that I'm not going to buy the Fire, is because the battery life on the Kindle is so good. If you go to effectively a tablet, then the battery life's going to come down a lot. I'm going to buy a Kindle just for reading books. I've got other devices to do the kind of things I want to do. If I want to read a book, then I want to use the Kindle.
I just see it the same as laptops and netbooks. The laptop will be the iPad, and the netbook version of the laptop will be a cheaper version, and the Kindle will fit into that.
Careful that you draw the distinction, though, Steve, between Kindle and Kindle Fire.
Kindle Fire will be the netbook version of the iPad, which will do the luxury stuff, and then there'll be a cheaper market, which Kindle Fire will fit into.
Here's why I think this is going to be absolutely huge and a big problem for Apple. Two reasons. First is price. The only reason that there is anything on the market besides iPhones with any measure of success is the price, and at least in the United States. People go in and they buy these horrible phones for $99 or free after rebate, just on price, because now most carriers have offered the iPhone, even the ones that have since the beginning, AT&T, Verizon. A lot of these people I know, friends and family, they're not geeks, they're not enthusiasts, they have no idea how to work their phone. Somehow they got talked into buying an Android phone running Android 1.6 or something stupid because it was free or very cheap after rebate. So price sells in a big way. That's why any touchpads were bought. Uh-huh. That's why any Galaxy Tabs were ever bought. Secondly, in order, you know, the concept of a killer app, an application which itself justifies purchase of the device. The Kindle Fire has two. One is the best interface to the best cheapest store on the planet. We were just talking about how Amazon.com is better than Best Buy and Barnes & Noble and all that stuff. Having a full color, better window to that world of commerce than the Amazon.com website, which we agree, you know, is not very good from a usability perspective. That's huge. Sit and browse, and you're basically in the world's biggest mall with the best prices. Second, the killer app is web browsing. I'm very intrigued by the concept of that Silk cloud-powered, as they call it, web browser using EC2. Most of your queries never leave Amazon's own servers, and they get pushed to your device before you even request the page based on statistical likelihood of your next click. No one else has that. If it is indeed as big of a speed benefit as they claim it will be, that could be huge. And we know from statistics now and surveys that even though apps are popular, the majority of what people do on their tablet devices, including iPads, is basic web browser browsing in the browser. So if that's a much better and much faster experience than the iPad, and it's less than half the price, that's a big problem for Apple.
Are you telling me, Eric, that you think that the ability to be able to browse the Amazon store is going to be a killer app on the Fire? So people are going to buy a Fire just so that they can browse the Apple store?
It's what James and I were saying the other week. All of the Fire is a big window into Amazon's shop.
Oh, no, it's quicker on the internet.
Yeah, but yeah, most people buy a Kindle for one reason, e-ink, and the ability to read a book without straining their eyes.
Exactly.
When you go back to any kind of LCD device, it's harder on your menses, it's harder on your eyes. There's no two ways about it.
See, I've got this question in my mind, whether the fact is that people want to have better access to the Amazon store, which they don't get through their desktop PC or Mac. And I don't think there is, because if I wanted to buy stuff from Kindle, from Amazon, I'd buy it through a web browser on my desktop. I wouldn't do it through, or my laptop, I wouldn't do it through a Kindle browser. You've just decided at the start of the show, Eric, you said that the Amazon store is the worst to navigate and find what you want. Well, that's going to get worse and worse and worse if you're talking about doing it through a tablet interface as opposed to a desktop interface. And the other thing is, the Kindle is so successful and so good at what it does, why would any of your media want to be replaced by a colour display, regardless of the price? And I think the question would be is engagement of people, in that people that buy iPhones are engaged in purchasing the iPhone rather than people who buy Android phones who are buying it because they're told it's the best thing available. If you look at people that go and buy iPads, they've heard that the iPad is the better thing. People have recommended the iPad. They go and buy it, and they believe in the experience. And I think that people will buy the Kindle Fire, but I don't think they'll buy it based on the browsing experience, because I think that will be completely alien to about 80% of the people who would want to buy it. The people who would want an enhanced browsing experience is a very small proportion of the existing iPad owners. I don't think it's a huge market that they're pinning on with that browser enhancement.
Well, let me just revise what I was thinking then, because I guess my point is there. Millions and millions of people buy absolute garbage based purely on price, based on just a couple of dollars less, you know, just not thinking, not using their minds at all when they make a decision like that. They buy those cheap little Walgreens tablets that are made, you know, with no software, and it's just garbage. It's an imitation. And so the price alone, being less than half the price, will, I mean, first of all, let's not even just Apple. Does this not destroy any other tablet market, Android tablets that are more than that price? I mean, I don't see how it couldn't. And then, so you get people in, you get these into homes or into people's hands, the initial customers, by price. Then once they have it, that stickiness, that things that makes them say, hey, this is a pretty good device. I'm now a loyal customer, enthusiastic about my purchase, and I will become an evangelist to others. But when they get it and they already have it on price, then go, whoa, this web browser is so fast, or whoa, what a great way to browse Amazon.com. Then that stuff, those are the killer apps that maybe, while not being the reason that the first people will buy it, will spread through word of mouth like Fire, and then get to and make the thing insanely popular.
Anyone else?
I love it. I think it's great that we've got some real competition in the market, real sensible competition. I just hope it lives up to the specs and the speed that they're promising.
So based on everything I've said and Eric and Steve have said, Ian and Sarah, are you swayed in any way?
Yes.
No.
I think it's a great idea, but I just think it's going to get like down by apps and I mean, the bits and pieces. It'd be too complicated. People won't like it.
There's a couple of points here in the chat room. Johnny's saying in the chat room, we mustn't have the Kindle Fire in Canada. I've never heard of it. And Teresa's saying, we've got to remember this is the first salvo. It depends what Amazon does next going forward.
Yeah, that's a good point, in fact.
But I mean,
see how they get on with it.
Having said that, the first salvo was Kindle. This can't be the first salvo beta.
I mean, for me, I'll hold judgment in terms of seeing what it's like until we've actually seen it. But
Find that fence post, Sarah.
I want to ultimately, for me, it comes down to battery life. I want a device that I can read books on. I've got a device to do everything else. So what, you know, why am I not going
to? Well, no, it doesn't.
What the hell do I need something else?
Well, you don't because you have one. But we're talking about people who don't have a tablet already. I thought.
Yeah.
No, see, now this is the next question, Eric. How much of this is actually that the people that have a tablet are the market? I mean, there's a great point that goes on in the 80s through 90s of computers, where it says everyone who wants a microcomputer by the end of 1985 had one. That's why the market tailed off, because no one else wanted to buy another one. There wasn't a market there. They fulfilled the market instantly, and then the market died. In terms of the tablet market, how many people out there want to buy a Fire? And I think all the people that wanted a tablet have already bought an iPad.
Sorry, go ahead. I view on that in that in the 80s when the Spectrum and the Micro came out, you got the computer and that was it. With the iPad, if the iPad stayed as iOS 1. And it didn't get the App Store, it wouldn't have been exciting, and it would have wouldn't have grown like it did, because the App Store came along and then you had all of these added apps go onto it, like the Angry Birds and everything, and that's what everyone wanted. You need the ecosystem to grow more than the hardware to encourage people to get it.
So now with the Amazon Kindle devices,
you need that to grow in the same way. You need something else to happen to it, App Store, whatever, to make it successful.
So, I mean, this is the interesting thing, is if you're talking about what makes a successful game store, you know, what are the key games that you've got to have in a game store?
Wait, hold on. I want to respond.
Angry Birds. That's about what everybody wants.
Sorry, go on, Eric.
I want to respond to what you said right before Steve responded about 1985 and the PC market tailed off. You're right. But the difference there is that with PCs, the reason they became more popular was because they grew in function as well as lowered in price. But even if price kind of stayed the same throughout the, you know, 80s, 90s, but the functionality became so much better. The value became so much better. It's a little bit different here because these tablets are primarily a luxury toy. People who use them for web browsing, people who use them for email, they don't need one of these things. No one needs a tablet is the thing. So, and I think the only reason that the iPad is as popular as it is because of that. You know, you've seen, everyone's talking about it now, how we've got, you know, the middle class just went whoop and we just scooped right out. No middle class anymore. Upper class. And then, you know, very lower working class with no money. And I think that's the only reason that you've got these, that a device that is primarily a luxury toy could be as insanely popular instantly as it was. And it won't be until, so my point is that device, the tablet, already can be as functional as it can be. Basically, it's a screen with apps. Do whatever you want with the software. The hardware is already there. What's it going to take to make that market explode? Lower and lower price. I've always said tablets will not take off until they get to be under $100, which I know is in the distant future. Well, maybe a couple of years. But having slower tablets, having a larger abundance of screens, I think is what people want, like paper.
See,
decent competition for Apple, I think, will bring the price down.
You see, I'm not convinced with this idea of games are what makes the platform. Because if you look at a lot of what goes on with the Apple platform at the moment, you were saying about Amazon being fairly unnavigable. If you look at the App Store, the App Store is diabolically unnavigable. If you put in a games, and I would like to look at action and adventure games, you get 32 replies. And you're saying these are the only 32 applications that fall in that category in the whole of the App Store. No, they aren't. There's plenty more in there, but you cannot find them. Apple is getting you to buy the ones that it wants you to buy. And if you look at what makes a successful store, you know, if you start GameStop or you start Game here in the UK going forwards, what are the genres of game that you know you have to stock and to a high standard, otherwise your shop will be closing in a very short space of time?
Genres are strategy.
You've got to have a strategy game that's a killer application. Civilization, those kind of things. You've got to have a simulation and role play game. You've got to have an absolute killer first person shooter, and you've got to have the main key sports programs of golf, football, American football, UK football, FIFA, and baseball and NBA. Ice hockey. If you haven't got those nine key factors associated with your games, you're going to fail. And if you look at the App Store has got hardly any of those key factors. It is full of crap. It is full of shooter games that are rubbish. Happy Gunner, which sits and is the most unplayable game you've ever seen. Real Golf, which is anything but friggin' real. Productivity apps like Analog App, which is the biggest turd you've ever seen in your life. And it doesn't fulfill the criteria of having cutting-edge games that would make it a successful app store. And if you look at when they stand up on the store and say, the App Store has got the following, and they come out with all the numbers, they never come out with the sales. They come out with, we've got this many applications. Yeah, but okay, but 50% of those are friggin' iFart.
Good rant.
Sorry, let me give you a quick example of the price I was talking about. I recently bought the $79 Kindle that just came on the market, the cheapest one ever. And in no time at all, I've been sending articles from the web to it, longer articles, buying books, downloading free books, classic books, classic literature and everything, and for free. And
you've been buying stuff for free. Good lad.
Yes. And already, already there have been books that I would have bought on audiobook, but I thought, no, because now that I can highlight and annotate and go back and search and find meaningful quotes and for research and further reference, why would I want to read a book now? Or why would I want to just listen on audio and just lose the ability to reference that again in the future? The highlighting, the syncing, the searching by words. I found so many live quotes while I've been doing shows and stuff from the Steve Jobs book. It's like a search for it. I would have killed for this through high school and college. Are you kidding me? Flipping through pages. I hate that stuff. So this has changed my life all of a sudden. It changed how I read. I now read more and I love it. It's so different. I get better research and et cetera. So I'm like, why did I never have one of these before? Oh, yeah. It's because they were $400.
Right. Hang on a second, because I'm just going to go back to the point that I made right at the start of this conversation. Now you've got a Kindle, the cheapest one available, that does all of those things that you've just evangelically ranted on about. Would you buy a Fire?
No.
I would not. I don't own an iPad. I just have no use for a tablet.
Mate, if you've just evangelized about the Kindle at the basic very level that you've got there, there is no way on God's green earth that anyone that feels the way that you do about Kindle would ever buy the Fire. I've got to say, is it a threat to Apple? I don't think it is, and I think it's not a threat to Apple because I reckon 50% of the people that own an iPad don't use it anyway. It's a doorstop.
I think you guys have it backwards. I think the Kindle Fire is not a danger to the Kindle text.
I think the Kindle text is the killer of the Kindle Fire.
Yes, that was my point too.
Yeah.
You have just evangelized about the benefits of a Kindle. I would buy a Kindle for my wife because she reads avidly. I would not buy a Kindle Fire for her. And I never will buy a Kindle Fire, regardless of the price, because it doesn't have the things that I think would make it a great tablet, including the physical size of it, because Ellis already plays on the 10-inch iPad that I've got, and he loves it. What on earth do I want to buy it for? And I am the typical user they're going for. I am the pad buyer who's already bought the pad that he wants. The pad market, I think, it is saturated.
Well, I'm gonna blow your mind here, because the things that I was just praising about, evangelizing about this Kindle, are actually every one of them, except for reading, better on an iPad. In the Kindle app on an iPad, highlights, annotations, searching, the whole user interface of the book way better on a tablet, including Apple's iPad with Amazon software, than on the Kindle hardware. The only difference, and the only reason I bought one, it's so much easier on my eyes. That's a personal preference, but a lot of people agree. That's why I think Kindle will continue to coexist until there is a color e-ink.
And what about the battery life?
That's great too, but I don't read 8 hours at a time, so I wouldn't mind charging it every day.
That's the big thing with the Kindle.
I think the weakness in the Kindle for me in the way we live with our iPad is newspapers and magazines. We're now completely getting all of that over apps, the Times and the Sunday Times. That has replaced our reading habits more so than the book side, really, with the
I think you're atypical, Steve. I think applications for reading magazines and newspapers on the iPad have flopped and have flopped beyond belief.
I notice a lot of people on the tube now, and
dude, there's a bigger world than London. There's the problem.
Ewan's right. Sorry, it was cutting out. I don't know where this statistic came from, but I did hear this on the news recently that people on average owners of tablets only have like one or two custom news apps, like the New York Times app or whatever. They only have a couple of those. And then like the vast majority of news reading is done through the web browser. That's one of the reasons that I say that Silk browser could be a killer app, because people just aren't reading through specialized news apps.
And I would say it's if they know it's even there, because I think most people don't.
In a year's time, it'll be a lot more accepted than where we are now.
Rightio. So the Londoner believes that London habits will spread across the globe. That's like never changed in 100 years, has it? No. Oh, that was a great discussion. I loved that. Have we got any cool thingies? Steve? Have you got
I've got two.
You got two?
Do you want the soppy one or do you want the real one?
It's not crappy candles, is it?
No, not crappy candles. I'm going to put a...
I'm gutted it didn't come and down on Tuesday, because I was willing to take those off your hands.
The little girls now, I've got a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old, and they love them. They go to sleep with them. The candles from last week. I've got two things, just very quickly. One, a YouTube video of made me cry. There's a bloke proposing to a girl, which is a kind of... on the train from Euston to Watford, the 1927 train from Euston to Watford on YouTube. And it was in London, and it was a UK situation. That's a very American thing. And it was good. It was a kind of crowd group started singing, but that was cool. I've put the link in the chat room. But the other thing, we had a TiVo box. What are you laughing at me?
No, I'm not. Go ahead. I wouldn't dream of laughing at you. You're from London.
We had a TiVo box installed this week. We're on Virgin, and TiVo have recently coupled up with Virgin. And it's new to the UK, I think. I think it's a few months old. So, yeah, we're now getting used to TiVo in the UK, starting to record suggestions, etc.
TiVo's been around for a long time, but they stopped selling it actively through, I think, the late 90s. Early 2000s, okay. But it was around before that, because Birmingham Cable had it as well when it was before it was Virgin Media, definitely. But the TiVo box is very, very good because of the predictive. It records the things it thinks you'd like to see.
Yeah,
doesn't it? Rather than very good.
Yeah. For each you have thumbs up, thumbs down for each program. You do thumbs up, thumbs down, so if you like it or not. And then it starts to learn what you like, and starts to record other stuff as well. And yeah, it's good.
Excellent. Ian, do you have a cool thing for us? Have you got a cool thing for us?
I do have a cool thingy. It's a thing called, it's very, very geeky, this. So I'm not sure how many people are supposed to. It's a thing called RM Prep USB. And it's available from www.rmprepusb.com. And what it is a little utility which will allow you to make a bootable Windows 7, Windows XP, bootable USB stick.
This is so geeky, there isn't even a picture that I can slide into the video feed.
There is a picture. Scroll down on his page, there's a picture of some very geeky...
That's not a picture, that's a screen capture.
Yeah, it's what I'm doing. That's what it is. It's a very, very geeky thing, but it's been incredibly useful this week to knock up a couple of boot USB keys to fix a few machines. It's, if you like that kind of thing, very, very handy. And if you want something less geeky, I've been playing with SimpleNote.
And the SimpleNote
client for Chrome is brilliant.
Can this be used to take a Windows installer DVD and turn it into, and copy that image that and turn a partition into that installer?
Yeah. You can use it to make a bootable Windows 7 install disk from the
screen. Yeah. Screenshot from the Jobs book.
No. No, it's not. Your pick,
I get it. That's funny.
Has met with Eric Lanigan approval, Ian. Well done, mate.
Really? Excellent.
It would seem so. And Simple Note as well. Jolly good.
And Simple
Note. Sarah.
Yes. Well, what? If you think that was geeky, you wait until you see this one.
Oh, thanks, Sarah.
Sharpen your pocket protectors.
Yep. This one is a piece of software called Fiddler.
And yet again, there is no picture for me to apply on the video feed.
It is very much for web developers, and it's for diagnosing HTTP traffic between the server and the front end. I'm sorry, apologize for the fact that
it's fine.
But it got me out of jail big time earlier this week. And from the chap who recommended it to me, I'm very grateful. He tells me that it was actually written by somebody at Microsoft. I've not seen anything to accredit that. I don't know where he got it from, but apparently that's what he said. But it is amazingly useful. I'm not going to begin to try and describe it in any more technical detail because you'll all fall asleep, I'm sure.
if you need to
diagnose HTTP traffic when you're testing a website or trying to find out what's going on with IIS, unfortunately, it is only Windows-based. It's not... not available on anything else, so that is the bit of a downside. I was a bit disappointed by that, but as we use Windows extensively at work, it did actually help me quite a lot.
Excellent.
There's got to be some kind of we need a scoring system for the cool thingy segment where there's got to be like a quadrant or a dimensional continuum of obscurity. You get extra points for the obscurity of the thing, how little known it is to geeky. You get geek points and get like double the geek experience points, and then you get if it's funny or entertaining or and score system boosts up your experience points.
If we're gonna do that,
do what?
Sorry, what?
Can we get my candles back out if we're gonna start scoring?
Your candles were awesome, mate. Your four candles.
Oh, don't go there.
We'll have to explain four candles to Eric afterwards. He won't get the two Ronnies at all. And that's probably a good thing.
Most of this show's gone over my head. I haven't heard as soon as talking about the stores, not know any of these brand names at all.
Lemsip, and he was lost.
It's all started with Lemsip. Now, do you guys know about Rift Tracks, or is that something that I have a brand that you don't know about?
Are you moving on regardless?
Oh, I thought, sorry. Sarah, are you done?
Yeah, no, I finished. Don't worry, go on, Eric.
Eric gets so excited because he has so few cool thingies when he turns up that when he's got one, he just can't wait. He's Asperger's almost.
And this is so cool. So you guys know what Rift Tracks is?
No.
Okay, do you know what Mystery Science Theater 3000 is?
It was a video game from the 80s, by the sounds.
What?
That sounds a bit like.
Oh, I'm surprised. So it was this big thing. It was a big deal. It was like a cult favorite on a Comedy Central. These guys would make fun of. They'd riff what they call it, which is basically just telling scripted jokes. What would you call it? Heckling the movie, basically, of bad old movies that they would get the rights to, and then they would overdub their comments like a joke commentary. And so I have every one of these they've ever done because the Rift Tracks now, it's a newer thing. That was in the 90s. The Rift Tracks is brand new and it's Hollywood films and they don't sell the movies because they can't get the rights, obviously. You buy the MP3s from them of their jokes and you overlay those. You sync them up with your DVDs or you pirate them off BitTorrent and then you donate using the donate button on their webpage. That's unfortunately what you have to do for this one, which I think may be the funniest thing you'll ever see in your life. It is a bootleg. It is a riff of a bootleg copy of what's called the Star Wars Holiday Special, a little known thing from 1977. Again, 10 years before I was born, so this is all history to me. Right after Star Wars came out, and it's got the original people. It's got Luke Skywalker, Leia, Han Solo, Chewbacca, and they're going in, and all the real cast, written with George Lucas, partnered, 2-hour like 70s crappy variety show where they had B. Arthur sings with Greedo in the cantina. Sings a song. Art Carney, Jefferson Starship. I mean, just weird 70s B-list things that I even had the Wikipedia to know who they are. It's the most bizarre. And it's about Chewbacca going home to his family. So it's got the family of Wookiees. And so it by itself would be the most bizarre thing you've ever seen from the Star Wars universe and just laughable in itself. But then they bring like their A game for these jokes and it is so funny. So if you're curious and you can't find this, I'll hook you up. I've got a copy, but you have to promise to download the payment to donate the payment equivalent to them because it's just so ridiculously funny.
Rifftracks, RIFFTRAX.com. Yes.
Yep.
That's them.
Have they got a screencast online version?
Screencast online? I don't think so. Don McAllister did this. I don't think so. My pick is something that happened very late this evening. I have picked something that I'm going to save for next week because when I came back from being away tonight, I just, for no apparent reason, the word transport tycoon jumped into my head. And I said, I wonder if you can get transport tycoon. I've actually got the original Windows copy over there in my rack on the wall. And I thought, I wonder if I can get it for Mac. And Robert Falk, one of the guys who contributes to the blog from Sweden, he said, I found this, and you can get Transport Tycoon for the Mac if you go to OTTD. Where's the bloody address? It's disappeared now. OTTD.org/EN. There you go. Transport Tycoon Deluxe. /EN. And if you go to otd.org/EN, you can get Transport Tycoon. And Transport Tycoon was a game that probably cost me most of my youth. It's addictive. If it's half as good, there you go. The only thing that's a downside is it's the deluxe version. I only wanted the standard version, but it's brilliant. Truly, truly brilliant. And it's free. There you go.
Looks a bit like that. I've forgotten that game. Is it Farmville?
No, it's not Slim City. It's far better than Slim City because all you do is lay down the road, the rail, and the air networks. And if you're very sensible, you can work out how to lay down roads that people can't link to so that you can put the bigger airports in afterwards.
Can you lay down fiber along the roads and then string in the telephone poles and upgrade the copper?
No, just as a transport dude. Doesn't do the IT connections.
All right.
What about PVC sewer pipes?
Whatever floats your boat, dude. That's fine. If you'd like to know more about Eric Lanigan's latex pipes, then send us an email and they'll send you a picture. UK2.net are the people that keep this crap afloat. And if you want to carry on listening to us, you need to support them, please, because we are sapping an enormous amount of the bandwidth from them. They're fantastic. They support us every week. And we keep saying, please, please, please support them. But whatever you do, stop what you're doing now. Go to bageltechnews.com and click on the UK2 logo and just click through to them. Don't do anything else. Just do that. That's fine, because then they'll know that we sent you. Also, if you want to buy anything, please go and buy whatever you want to do. And then when you get to the end of the checkout, use the offer codes that support Bagel Tech. Now, we don't get a penny from these, and you get 15% off if you put in Bagel Tech as a single word. If you put in Bagel DNS, then the DNS management charge that comes along with transferring your domain in is automatically wiped away from it. They're the biggest thing that ever happened to us, effectively, because otherwise we'd be in real poop. I mean, we're talking somewhere between sort of 10 and 12 terabytes, a month of data disappears off our servers, and they just don't care. They're happy. Thank you ever so much. They just say, it's all right, don't worry. And we've got a brand new show coming. We've got This Week in Nonsense, which is currently being done by Jodie Max, Chris Woods, and Brian Munro is coming to the network, and he's going to be Bagel Tech Nonsense. So that'll be starting a week on Saturday. They'll be posting their first episode, and it's all the underbelly of the internet. So you can have a listen to that, and it's a lot of good fun. So please support UK2.net because they pick up all of our bandwidth. They are our lifeblood. Cheers. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Neighbour?
London Mac Hughes Group.
And you will be metaphorically bent over by Mr. Frankie Ball tomorrow, no?
No.
You're not going?
No.
You chickened out?
I didn't know it was tomorrow. I'm not going tomorrow.
It's you were second on the list, apparently, and I obviously wasn't third because they haven't emailed me yet.
No, Frankie Boyle was looking for somebody to defend iPhone and Apple. Frankie Boyle is a UK comedian who's very risque, very on the edge of...
You didn't know who he was before I explained it.
I didn't know who he was, but basically they had an interview with me, and I think I spoke to Ewan as well, and we both failed the test. The type of person they wanted was somebody who texts 400 times a day, has 5,000 different iFart apps on their phone, loves organising riots, and that wasn't me. So I don't think they wanted me on the show. But
you conformist, you.
Yeah, I'm a bit too. Unfortunately, I won't be on the show.
Frankie Boyle, the man who is going to complain about battery life, but uses some of the shortest words in the English language.
Yes.
Only one syllable, four letters.
Yes. Often.
Often. Ian, where can we get a hold of you, mate?
Me? I'm on Twitter, as always, at TIOA, BOA, turn it off and back on again.
And propping up...
me there occasionally, won't we?
And propping up the bar at the Rither Arms.
When I get out into the middle of nowhere, certainly.
Oh, mate. We'll be there soon. Don't worry. I'm up in December. Definitely. I'll put the date. Sarah, where can we get you, mate?
You can get hold of me on the Twitters at SarahJaneUK and also on the Bagel Tech F1 show, which I think is going to be Monday.
Monday, 9:30 p.m. Yeah. We'll be doing the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, and we'll be talking about how Vettel won.
Probably.
Yeah. And last but by no means least, Mr. Eric Lanigan, where can we get you, pal?
That would be at the insanely great ericlanigan.com and the insanely great twitter.com/ericlanigan and the insanely great just about everywhere else. ERIKLANIGAN.
And how's late night tech doing?
I took this week off because I'm still sick and catching up on a lot of other work also. But Monday, it'll be back again in full swing. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 11 p.m. Eastern.
Good man. We shall be looking forward to it. If I'm awake early one morning, having wet the bed, I will be watching it.
Sounds good.
We'll be back again tomorrow. We've got the Max show in the afternoon at 3 o'clock, and we've got the photo show just before that at 2 p.m. That's a new time for it. If you're not sure what time the shows go out and when the live ones are on and not on, then look at the live diary. So if you go to the live.bageltechbig.com, or even just click on the live link on the homepage at bageltechnews.com, there'll be a little icon there where you can subscribe to the diary, and it'll come up in your iCal or in your Outlook, and it'll tell you when all the shows are. So if we actively move any of those shows for any reason, that'll automatically update to what you've got, and the stuff and This Week in Nonsense is going to go in there as well, which is going to sort it out. So do subscribe to that if you possibly can. We'll have the daily show first thing in the morning, and then we'll have a weekend of rest followed by a weekend of fun. Have a great weekend. I hope you can join us for some of the shows tomorrow. If not, see you next week.